This is an iHeart podcast.
You don't have to dip forever. You know that, right? You don't have to smoke forever. And the reason I say it like that is I have been that guy. I've been that guy. I dipped for so long. And what would happen is I would decide I'm going to quit. Oh, that's bad for me. I'm going to quit. I'm a man. I don't need any help. I'm just going to quit cold turkey. And I would fail time and time and time again. I tried things like the patch. That didn't work. Gum, sunflower seeds. I tried it all. It's just a matter of finding the right thing to help you quit. That's Jake's Mint Chew. Go, put in your dip. Just make sure it's Jake's Mint Chew. It's tobacco-free. It's nicotine-free. It's even sugar-free. And I highly recommend, just a personal choice, I highly recommend their CBD pouches because it really helps take that extra edge off. Get a jakesmintchew.com. That's jakesmintchew.com. Make sure you use the promo code Jesse at checkout. When you do that, you get 10% off.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
Who is the luckiest guy in the history of the world? Or guys, we're going to discuss that here in just a little bit today. It is the now world famous Jesse Kelly Show. Chris, I won't hear that. I'm looking at these download locations you sent me. We are hot in other nations, and who can blame? It's what, Chris? It's probably international chicks. Antifa, do you believe it's a domestic terrorist group? Does the director of the FBI believe it's a domestic terrorist group? Twitter, locking the accounts of, well, you're just going to have to wait and see. Coronavirus, illegal immigrants coming to a town near you. Yes, we are completely insane in this country. It is the Jesse Kelly Show, 877-377-4373. Jesse at jessekellyshow.com. It is going to be such a fun day. I talked to the old lady as I was leaving the house today on the way out the door, and she said, "Why are you smiling?" I said, "It's going to be a good day." All right. So since it's going to be a good day, I think we should start out by talking about how we nuked a couple cities. Let us discuss, as promised yesterday, the atom bomb. The decision-making process on both sides. I understand, unlike many of the stories I tell you, this one you know. You'll probably walk away with a couple tidbits you didn't know before. Let's begin. First of all, let's remember this. Here, look, you know what? This is the kind of generous, what, Chris? Nice shogun I am. I'm going to give you your little water cooler tidbit right out of the gate. So you'll pick up some more. But here, just remember this. You can brag to your friends. Don't you dare give me credit for this. You just act like you came up with this information later on. You say, did you know that little boy, the bomb that was dropped on Hiroshima, depending on how American you are, you know it was a uranium bomb? And fat boy that was dropped on Nagasaki was a plutonium bomb. And remember, as the names would indicate, Fat Boy was a much, much, much bigger bomb. So there you go. First bomb was uranium. Second bomb was plutonium. I swear I'm not going to nerd out on stuff like that all day. And I almost traveled down this rabbit hole of digging into nuclear energy and how it created a bomb. And I'll hit that from a 30,000 foot view. No offense to Hiroshima. What, Chris? We're going to have some jokes on the show today. We can't do anything about that. And full disclosure, I'm going to discuss some of the injuries that came from these bombs, and it may be a little bit gruesome. Let's rewind. Atomic research. When did it begin? late 1800s, like 1895. And no, this wasn't the, hey, somebody bring around my horse. Let's make a nuclear bomb. It was more discovering things about neutrons and all these other things like that. Like I said, I'm not getting into those details. Now, it advanced from there. This guy discovers this. This guy discovers that. This guy discovers this with that. Then eventually it occurs to somebody, wow, these things are like, they're disintegrating in front of our eyes. Maybe we could disintegrate people. And that sounds cold, but that's also the history of the world. Whatever new technology you come up with, somebody will look at it and figure out how to weaponize it. Let's pause there for a moment and get you up to speed on the war when it comes to atom bomb time. As you know, I'm not going to go into it today. I've gone into it 1,000 times. Japan was backwards, to put it mildly. Then Japan rapidly advanced, called the Meiji Restoration. Kind of kept that samurai, die for the god, emperor, Bushido code attitude, but added an extremely modern military and economy towards it, expanded rapidly, invaded Manchuria, slapped around the Chinese, attacked us at Pearl Harbor, greatly expanded their territory in the Pacific, gobbling up natural resources, kicked everybody around during the early parts of the war, and then the American manufacturing military machine started churning out ships like playing cards, and we started blowing them back off the island thanks to our Navy and some very brave Marines and Army guys, if I'm being honest, doing an island-hopping campaign. And we do have to clarify, Japan was absolutely barbaric during World War II, because it's going to come into play here. Barbaric. The things they did to the Chinese people, there's a reason they call it the Rape of Nanking. I'm not going to go into that. And you know I hate using that word on the air. It's such a gruesome word. But when they invaded the then Chinese capital of Nanking, slaughtering, pillaging, I mean, like Genghis Khan in the modern era. We've done a show on it before, if you're interested in that. Jewish producer Chris will get it up on the Twitter, on the show Twitter, at Jesse Kelly Show. The atrocities didn't stop with the Chinese. By now, towards the end of the war, we are well aware, and the American chain of command from the president on down is well aware, that American troops captured are routinely tortured to death in horrific ways. Horrific ways. Our prisoners of war are often tortured, killed, kept in just unspeakable conditions. Everybody the Japanese encounter hates them. And I mean hates them. No matter who the Japanese encounter, they treat everybody who's not Japanese lower than, just absolutely barbaric. And you know I'm a fan of the Japanese, big fan. I think that Bushido code stuff is awesome. I think what they were able to do militarily during this war was awesome. I'm not ripping on them, but the world was now aware of what they were dealing with, and they were aware that these people were consistently, time and time and time again, dying, committing suicide just to kill you for when they leave this earth. It's what they believed in. They believed it would give them a special place in heaven. No Japanese unit in the entirety of World War II surrendered en masse. You had a few guys here or there, but that is unheard of on a war this scale. You never had a whole company stand up and say, all right, we're done. No, they would. I mean, we were having to shoot the wounded on the battlefield instead of caring for them, because they would routinely just wait for you to come up to them and pull a grenade and blow up our guys. This was a common complaint. It's barbaric. And that's going to come into play as the reason I'm bringing this up. Now, let's pause there. Let's go to the bomb thing. We begin what's called the Oppenheimer Project when it is brought to FDR's attention. We might have a bomb here. Oh, okay. That's good. Go ahead and develop it. No. You don't understand. We might have a really, really, really big bomb here. We need funding, we need the best researchers in the world, and we need this thing to be really secret. FDR approves it. It cost, you should know, the Oppenheimer project cost $2 billion at the time. That's about $26 billion in today's money, which money means nothing to us anymore, sadly, but that's a lot of money. Britain actually was as far along as we were, really, at this point, and wanted the bomb too. They didn't have the money to push the research to actually get one, to create one. Remember what I talked about yesterday? You are so proud of your military, and you should be. That military is a product of your economy. So, this Oppenheimer project, who's involved? Well, there's an interesting set of people involved. We're going to talk about them in a moment. And Antifa, are they a domestic terrorist group? Hang on.
Follow, like, and subscribe on social at Jesse Kelly Show.
You need to take care of your heart. And part of me hates telling you this because I feel like I'm your dad or something, or your doctor. Bob, you're just not taking good enough care of your heart. I'm not doing that. I'm just here bringing you an easy solution to help your heart a little, help your blood pressure a little, a natural solution. I'm not offering you pills, none of that. Superbeats. Superbeats heart chews. I'm so happy I found them. Well, I mean, to be honest, I didn't find them. I had a friend recommend them to me. One, they don't taste like beets. Two, I have heart trouble in my family, blood pressure trouble in my family. This helps with that. This helps more than just diet and exercise. Get yourself some Superbeats. Go to getsuperbeats.com/Jesse. That's getsuperbeats.com/Jesse. Buy two bags, get the third free.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
You can find me on social media at JesseKellyDC on Twitter and Instagram. That's where I'll get kicked off. On Facebook, I'll get kicked off there too. And on Locals. Now, I should note, coming up next hour, we have a candidate running against Adam Kinzinger. I just said the name Adam Kinzinger. You are probably punching your radio right now. Please don't hurt your fist in any way. Just know Adam Kinzinger, yeah, I dislike him as much as you dislike him. I have told you 1,000 times I'm going to be using my platform to get involved in Republican primaries because I'm tired of spineless Republicans. So we went out and found some absolute dime who's running for office against him. And this chick looks switched on. Man, I'm serious. She looks good. She sounds good. She's going after Kinzinger. We're bringing her on the show. Looking forward to that next hour. Look, I've never spoken to her. I've never said a word to her. I haven't exchanged a text message with her. We're going to find out, you and I together, if she sounds like the real deal. She sounds like the real deal, support her. If not, dumper, we'll go find someone else. I'm done with bad Republicans. Period. That's what we're going to do. But we're dealing with atomic bombs today. Two of them specifically, sadly, for Japan. The Oppenheimer Project. It's actually a coalition. We bring in people from all over the world, many of whom are Jews from Europe who did not want to stick around and get killed by Adolf Hitler. I love that. It's the ultimate up yours to Hitler. Oh, no, I think we'll go to America. What's that? You need me to come up with a bomb specifically made for Germany? Yep, we'll do that. Count me in. I love it. And just another little note you may not have known. Remember, the bomb was made for Germany, was always intended for Germany. Germany just happened to surrender right before we developed the thing. But Like I said, coalition, many Jews from Europe came in, came together. Britain, Canada also involved, helping us. We eventually develop it. Now this brings us to Okinawa. If you look at Okinawa, you'll see it. I've been there. I did a six-month deployment there when I was in the Marine Corps. It's off the southern tip of Japan. The strategy was always, remember, Japan had that gigantic, take Japan and draw a huge, huge circle around it. They had gobbled up all the islands out there and fortified them. And their thinking was always that Americans were soft and would not be willing to take the casualties they were going to take to fight each and every island and hop our way to Japan. Boy, were they wrong. One, two, we were hopping our way toward Japan, and the goal was to get within bombing range. And every island we took brought us closer to being able to launch our bombers and go bomb Japan to smithereens. Well, then Okinawa happens, that island off the southern tip of Japan. And I think we would have dropped the bomb anyway, but let's just put it this way. The fighting in Okinawa was so inhumanly terrible. I may do a show on the actual fighting in Okinawa, maybe later this week, maybe next week. Probably next week. I'll do one on there. But it was so bad, that is what pushed people over the edge in that, oh man, we cannot invade Japan. Because by Okinawa, by the time there was a battle of Okinawa, because we'd already closed in, we'd clinched that circle down, Okinawa, the Japanese knew they had lost the war and were still dying to the last man. And it was just, the thinking was this. There were signs set up. You can go Google image them right now if you want. There were signs set up all over the island where guys would say, they'd write Golden Gate in 48. What did they mean by that? That meant they assumed America was going to invade Japan and none of them were going to live. That's how fierce the Japanese were fighting. The American soldier, the American Marine, assumed he was going to die. And it was so bad on Okinawa. You know that famous guy, Eugene Sledge. He was a Marine who wrote about the fighting in the Pacific. His recurring nightmare the rest of his life, of all the battles he fought in, was Okinawa. It was so bad. And on this word's getting up to the command. It's so bad. They're not giving up. It's suicides. And the kamikaze planes. Japan had a bunch of things going on because we were already bombing it to smithereens. You see, we were dropping napalm bombs, incendiary bombs, on places like Tokyo. We had killed 100,000 people in Tokyo, burning it to the ground. We were bombing mainland Japan, wherever we could reach, and we were destroying what few natural resources they had left. So now even their planes were made of more wood than they ever had before. It was just, they had this system set up where they were scraping for resources so badly, when they finished a plane, they had to tow it behind a horse and buggy to get the plane to someplace where they could actually take off with it. They're starving for resources badly. Really, really, really badly. And the kamikazes, the pilots, a lot of it was their mentality anyway. I'm not saying the normal pilots wouldn't have, but not only do they have crappy planes by this point in time, put together with scraps, they have crappy pilots. It turns out, and you should feel very prideful about this, American pilots are absolute beasts. Our fighter pilots were just simply peppering the Japanese. And the Japanese had great ones and great planes in the beginning, but they could not withstand the Americans. They just couldn't. Our guys turned out to be better. We had better equipment. We could replenish it faster. We just wore them down. So by Okinawa, you have crappy planes and crappy pilots from Japan. So what are they doing? They're doing a little ceremony before they fly, arming the bomb, flying them up, and you've seen the videos or pictures. They're flying the planes into our naval ships off of Okinawa. And we're taking over 300 casualties. The stories are heartbreaking of these planes landing on our naval ships and just blowing people up as they eat in the mess hall. And it's awful. Absolutely terrible. So Okinawa, we were already worn out with these Japanese and how they fought to the last man. Then the Japanese were ramping it up because they're even more desperate. And the American public was tired of it. They were tired of it. The American public, understandably, and I would say it's a good thing, the American public does not like to see pictures of dead American troops. They do not like to hear about dead American troops. And I want to explain this. This is not universal. You think this is universal. I'm not saying that Japanese were celebrating every time they saw dead Japanese troops, but especially like in the East, the Far East, Japan, China, things like that, they simply accept these things as that's the way that goes. I'm not going to say there's less of a priority on human life. I will say because it's not a Judeo-Christian-based society, you know, Judaism and Christianity is really the dominant religions in America. There's not an individual-based thing. You know, and look, a religion really determines the culture of a nation. That's just a fact. You're a Jew, you're a Christian, you believe the individual matters a lot. You are your own. The East doesn't think that way. So they don't get reports of, oh, we lost 100 Chinese today, and they're wailing and gnashing of teeth. I mean, yeah, moms miss their sons. That thing's the normal. But they don't wear down like that. Even Afghanistan, we're running into that all the time. They view this war as generational. Yeah, you'll kill a bunch of our guys. That's fine. I'll have more. We're still going to last longer than you. And that's going to play an important part in our story here. Now, more system working against you. I'll describe that in a minute. Hang on.
Wake up and text. Text and eat. Mm-mm. Text and catch the bus. Text and miss your stop.
Wait.
Text and be late to work.
Sorry, I'm late.
Text and work. Text and pretend to work. Text and act surprised when someone calls you out for not working.
Who, me?
Text and meet up with a friend you haven't seen in forever.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
Text and complain that they're on their phone the whole time. Text and listen to them complain that you're on your phone the whole time.
Ugh.
Text and whatever. But when you get behind the wheel, give your phone to a passenger. Put it in the glove box. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
You know what I can't wait for? I can't wait for the emails. Jesse@jessekellyshow.com. And I can't wait for them because it's impossible to do big controversial topics like the atomic bombing of two cities without ruffling some feathers. We tend to ruffle some feathers on this show. Don't forget, not only do we have Adam Kinzinger's primary opponent coming up next hour. By the way, just to explain, Chris, before you ask, how did I get it? I just asked. That's what? That's how I got it. I asked. Jewish producer Chris says he refuses to accept my level of celebrity. The best part of it is absolutely abusing it and rubbing it in Chris's stupid face. That's the only thing that makes it worth it. All right, back to Hiroshima. Americans are tired of death. It's getting worse. It's getting worse. And we decide, as Germany falls, okay, maybe we need to take a look at this atom bomb thing. There are some other issues when it comes to invading Japan. Japan had, at this time, 168,000 Allied prisoners of war. All of them treated terribly. but 168,000 Allied prisoners of war. Japan had said publicly, if anyone invades, the second someone steps foot on this shore, if anyone invades, we're going to kill every single prisoner of war we have. And Japan has proven throughout the war, they're not going to have a problem doing that. That's not going to be some moral burden for them in any way. If they say they're going to, they're going to. We had been bombing Japan already, places like Tokyo. It should be noted, in case you're wondering, I was going to get to this a little later. We always talk about the atom bombs, and people will bring up, well, why didn't we bomb Tokyo? Tokyo was already leveled by this point. We had already bombed Tokyo to smithereens. It was just bombed with firebombs because Japan, everything's made. Everything's made, you know. You've seen them? You've seen the houses? It's all wood. It's all dried out flammable wood. You drop incendiary bombs in a big city made of that, whoosh, it's gone. But Truman becomes president. Remember, FDR dies towards the end. Truman becomes president. In this day and age, which is hard for us to imagine now, in this day and age, the vice president was not involved in anything. He wasn't in the know in anything. He was kept in the dark constantly. Half the time in these old eras, the vice president was an actual rival to the president. He picked him for political purposes. What I'm saying is Harry Truman takes over the office of the presidency after FDR dies and has no idea about the atom bomb. They bring the information to him right away. He's like, wait, what? We have a bomb? Like a one bomb that destroys a whole city? You can't be serious. Well, Truman, he handles it really well. Okay, well, that's good. Well, we're absolutely going to use it. He tells Joseph Stalin about it. Joseph Stalin, by all accounts, acted a little surprised, cool as a cucumber. Yeah, we already had Soviet spies all through the program. Stalin knew everything about the bomb, was trying everything he could to get one himself. Now, here comes the point where you have to understand the Soviet Union and Japan were not at war yet. They were not at war yet. That's not the way this war had worked. Obviously, the Soviets were fighting the Germans, but the Soviets and the Japanese during this war really had a neutrality pact going. Japan had gone to war with the Soviets in 1905. Japan had won. The Soviets were embarrassed. So Stalin wanted a pound of flesh, but they were not involved. And the reason I bring this up is we come up with what's called the Potsdam or Potsdam or the P-O-S-T-D-A-M, the Potsdam Declaration. This is simply a declaration to Japan that says, I know you want to sue for peace because Japan has no way to win. You must surrender absolutely everything. Everything. You don't get to say, well, we get to keep this or we get to keep that. No. You will get on your knees before us. We will absolutely do whatever we want to you. And when we're done with you, we'll let you know what we're going to give you back. No. You are going to surrender everything. Japan, remember, there's already haggling right now amongst the six-man leadership council in Japan. There's the six-man council and then the emperor who's above all of them, but he's actually not even invited to many of the meetings deciding on things in the war. Chris is raising his hands. Well, you have to understand, bud, the emperor in Japan at this time, he is like a god to them. And, I mean, he is a god. And I shouldn't say like a god. He is a god to them. He is not bothered with trivial matters. You're not going to bring things like the conduct of the war to the emperor. Very few times did he ever even raise his voice or get involved. They'd make huge decisions and the emperor wouldn't even know about them. Why? You don't bother the god king, that kind of a thing. And on this council, it's starting to get more and more split. Half the council is like, hey, we have no chance to win this war. If we want to save Japan at all, man, we got to surrender now. They hear the Potsdam Declaration from us. And what they do is they go to the Soviets and they say, hey, can you maybe negotiate a better deal than this for us? Surrender everything. We can't do that. We certainly can't do that. Stalin, who's very much interested in taking some territory back for himself once Japan goes down, chooses just to ignore them instead of helping them with the peace process. Now we have another decision we have to make as the United States of America. Remember, we do not have an unlimited supply of these bombs. We have enough material for exactly two. It was brought up to the leadership. What if we fire a warning shot? America is very understandably, and I would say this is a good thing, it says something good about us, understandably hesitant to drop a nuclear weapon on a bunch of civilians. The reality of what I'm going to tell you about when those bombs hit is ugly. It is women. It is children. It's horrific injuries for those who aren't dead. America is sensitive to this thing, and we always should be. That's not the kind of thing you're like, woohoo, nuked a bunch of kids today. I feel great. I mean, our bomb in Nagasaki went off right over the top of a junior high. That's real, man. Those are real people down there. Those are real people, too. The warning shot idea was, hey, let's prove to them what we have. Hey, Japan, we're doing a public warning shot there. We're going to do it publicly. We're doing a public warning shot. Here's us dropping one bomb. You surrender or this lands on one of your cities. It was dismissed out of hand. Dismissed out of hand because they had anti-aircraft guns. They had fighter planes who were shooting our bombers. We didn't want to give away. We can fly one plane over and nuke a whole city. It is presented oftentimes historically that this was some agonizing decision. It was absolutely not. Truman made the decision right away, and it was the right decision because your loyalty as the American president must be to Americans first. Doesn't mean you discount all other life. You should never do that, but it has to be to Americans first. What happens? Well, there you see that Battle of Okinawa we were talking about. Remember I told you there were a bunch of Navy ships getting beaten up pretty bad there? Sailors dying? One of the ships that was at the Battle of Okinawa was called the Indianapolis. The Indianapolis was hurt badly there. So it had to take off, went back home for repairs. Happened to be stateside. We decided to load up a very special cargo on the Indianapolis. And the Indianapolis brings some death with it to the Far East. It's time to talk about the actual explosion. Then we'll wrap this up and the national debt. Oh, I may have to bring it up today because this hurts. Hang on.
Jesse Kelly returns next.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that we can give our daughters everything they need to grow and learn. But not every child can focus on classes and play dates.
Nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. face hunger. That's one in six. School lunch might be their only meal each day. And it's heartbreaking to imagine any child going to bed hungry. We're dreaming of a perfect day when kids can smile, play, and just be kids without worrying about where their next meal will come from. Feeding America is working to make that perfect day a reality.
Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste. That food is given to families and children in need. Being a kid should be about doing things that make an ordinary day extraordinary. Learning to play an instrument, building a sandcastle, hosting tea parties. Hunger should never be an obstacle to growing up.
You can help end childhood hunger in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Jesse@jessekellyshow.com. I was just telling Chris, I had to take my boy to basketball practice last night, and their practice lasts about an hour. And it's far enough away from the house, it's not worth it. Drop him off, drive back to the house, go drop him off basketball practice, go pop in this little seafood restaurant pony up to the bar, have a beer while I'm waiting for him, doing some stuff for the show. Yeah, this is, I'm a slave to you, really, but doing some stuff for the show. And I walk in, place is dead. There's nobody in there. I walk in, I don't have a mask on because it's Texas and no one cares here. The bartender looks up at me and he looks around and scrambles to grab his mask and puts it on. I'm like, buddy, please, don't. It's fine. He's like, oh, thank goodness. We're just done with it out here. We're done with it out here. All right. We decide on the bomb. Here's how it went down. Japan, obviously, they knew we were going to try to bomb them because we'd been bombing them a lot. They didn't know, actually, we were bringing the atom bomb, but they knew we were bombing them a lot. So they were ready for us. They were constantly sending people up in the air to try to get us. Constantly sending fighters up there, constantly shooting anti-aircraft weapons. So what do we do? We send a bunch of bombers to the south, only we are aiming at Hiroshima. Now, Japan knows there are a bunch of bombers in the sky. They can now clearly see that. So they assume we're bombing somewhere over there. Well, we don't need a bunch of bombers for one bomb. That's the advantage of having one bomb to feed a whole entire city. So we distract them. We send a bunch of bombers to the south. They head down there. We send the Enola Gay on to Hiroshima. It drops Little Boy. That's the first atom bomb. It detonates 1,900 feet over Hiroshima. Remember, these atom bombs don't land on the ground. They're detonated above. The temperature instantly reaches the surface of the sun. It's beyond comprehension. They say, and you can't get an accurate number on this at all, so don't bother trying. Some say 40,000 dead instantly. Some say 80,000 dead instantly. 100,000 over the next 5 years. You can't know because, well, you just superheated at least a square mile, if not more, to a temperature three times greater than is needed to melt iron. You don't know and will never know how many people are gone because they are just vapor now. They're vapor now. And you're not going to get a belt buckle left over. They're gone. There's not a tooth filling. Gone. Mushroom cloud, another little tidbit for you, which you probably already knew. The huge mushroom cloud, which you've seen 1,000 times over, is not smoke. It is debris from the ground that has been sucked up into the atmosphere. That's what you're looking at. You're looking at material that was on the ground. When you superheat things like this, and on the ground, we're talking 6,000 degrees Celsius on the ground. When you heat things up like that, remember I just said iron melts? Well, it's more than that. Ponds disappear. It's so hot. Where there was previously a pond is now not a little puddle in the bottom, dry ground, as if it's the Sahara Desert, gone. It does weird things to the human body, and I'm not talking about the people, obviously, who are now vapor. This was a common problem, and thousands died from this. Because everything's been superheated so much. And it's so hot, it sucks all the moisture out of the air because you just burnt it all up. It instantly super dehydrated everybody who wasn't killed. It's probably not something that's ever been done before. I don't know how you do it. Think about just snapping your fingers that fast and all the moisture in your body's gone. But they talked about the most debilitating, painful dehydration ever immediately after. And then there's a river running through Hiroshima. People are dying almost just as fast as they got dehydrated because when your body is that dehydrated, you cannot consume a lot of water. It will kill you. Your body cannot handle that change. Only when you're that thirsty, you're not going to listen to anybody saying, just take a sip. You're diving in, Jack, with your mouth open. And these people are dying in this way. And this is going to get gross. I'm going to make this really fast. Eyeballs are gone. It was not good on the eyeballs. Either blindness or flat out melting them. Glass melted, but then it's going to cool back off. You had a bunch of people with melted glass in their skin. The rain came later on that day. Oh, but it wasn't raining water. It was a man-made rain of soot from all the stuff we had launched into the atmosphere. It is skin. I don't even want to say this on the radio. It's really, really bad. Skin is hanging. It's really bad. And that's all I'm going to go into for the injuries. But this is not, we're not going to do gore porn on the show today. All right, I'm going to try to wrap this thing up here, and we will get to everything between ICE and Antifa and the border. Hang on.
/145/92 /180/111
/182/100 And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest and then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
A lot of people don't understand, including myself, I didn't, now I do, the impact of having a stroke.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you, start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
It's a new life, but I'm going to make it better. I'm coming back. Ask your doctor, check your blood pressure.
Brought to you by the American Heart Association, American Medical Association, and the Ad Council.
It's 773-777-4373, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. We also have more podcast reviews to leave today. Remember this. If you miss any part of the show, either the history segment or maybe you want the whole show, they're separated out. Look, even my TV show that I do every day, not to brag or anything like that, is on there. You can catch all this on iHeart, Google, Spotify, on iTunes. On iTunes, leave a 5-star rating once you subscribe and leave a review talking about how handsome I am. Does this have any real benefit to the show? Absolutely not. Does it make me laugh and make management upset that I've asked for handsome reviews? You bet it does. And we're going to keep doing that because now it's taken on a life of its own. Now there are over 500 of them and they're pants wetting funny. People calling me Adonis and everything. You idiots. All right, we're going to wrap up the two atom bombs, probably, in just a second. Hang on.
Jesse Kelly returns next. This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
Did you receive a briefing about the border today?
Yes, I did.
What did you learn?
A lot.
Is there a crisis?
Oh gosh, that's the leader of the free world. What did you learn? A lot. Play it again, Chris.
Did you receive a briefing about the border today?
Yes, I did.
What did you learn?
A lot.
Is there a crisis?
Gosh. All right, you know what? We'll get to Joe Biden. I am going to say something offensive about Joe Biden and his wife. I can't apologize for myself anymore, Chris. It just doesn't look. I am what I am at this point in time. The show is growing. I'm guessing it will continue to grow until it crashes in a gigantic ball of fire. Speaking of ball of fire, let's go back to the two atom bombs and try to wrap up this story. Okay, we are now at the point where Hiroshima is gone. Two-thirds of the buildings are leveled. If you've never seen pictures of the aftermath, which you probably have, I recommend you go look at them. It looks like something out of the movies. There was a city, and now there's nothing. There's nothing. There's like the remainder of a couple little buildings, the base of a wall or something. It's just gone. It's all gone. Now, what's going on? Here's what's going on. First, the leaders in Japan, one, they don't know right away how bad the damage is in Hiroshima because they're not at Hiroshima. You can't just snap your fingers and get a text message. You know, somebody snap a bunch of pictures and drop them to my iCloud. It doesn't work that way at this time. So it's not like they know instantly how bad the damage is. And they're getting word that it's bad, but they can't figure out how bad. And America is out there saying, that was one bomb, Jack. We will drop another one. You better surrender. Japan, trying to calm things down, they're not ready to give up yet, with their own people, is saying, that wasn't one bomb. You sent a bunch of bombers over and bombed it. That wasn't one bomb. So they're denying. It's just, what's about to come is inevitable now. Again, half the council says, we really need to negotiate. The other half says, absolutely not. The war hawk part wins out. The war hawk part is also saying this. Look, maybe that was their last bomb. They had no idea how many bombs we had. They didn't think we had the first one. They said, maybe that was their last one, and they're bluffing. That's one. Two, I don't care how many bombs they drop. America is not going to withstand the amount of death it's going to take to invade. Drop them all. All these people are going to heaven for dying for the emperor anyway. The American public will not take that amount of deaths for their troops to invade. Remember, they were enlisting 15-year-old boys into the military at this time because all the other young men were dead. They were women, old people, they were giving them bamboo spears, sharpening bamboo spears. They were preparing their entire population for total war of an invasion. What else happens right now? Russia, Stalin, that scumbag that he is, starts to smell an opportunity out there. He invades Manchuria. It violates their neutrality agreement, which was pretty flimsy anyway. It invades Manchuria. What's in Manchuria? The Japanese fighting force that Japan was most proud of. This is the unit that had been fighting in Manchuria for a long time. They were seasoned veterans winning all these battles. It was the one Japan celebrated. The Soviets by now are probably, with all due respect to my own country, probably the finest army in the world at this point because they just fought the largest conflict in the history of the world. I know, Chris, it hurt me to say it too. But you talk to an actual military guy, he will tell you, people that are all, why didn't we invade the Soviet Union? They'll say, yeah, we couldn't have. Chris said, good leadership, maybe a lot of men, but the best. Understand this, buddy. And look, I hate communists more than anyone else in the world. And I especially hate the Soviet Union. At the end of World War II, remember, the Eastern Front in World War II, Germany versus the Soviet Union, was the largest conflict of any kind in the history of mankind, by a mile. At the end of World War II, you have a Soviet army that was supplied not only by itself, and they were supplying themselves with great stuff, they were supplied by us with great supplies. Each and every unit they had was not a unit, it was a unit that had already fought for so long. They're all seasoned veterans. Their T-34 tanks were good. Just trust me, pal. This was the best army in the world. And I know I'm going to get hate mail for that, and that's fine. I want you to know it hurts me as much as it hurts you. I've asked around if this is the case, and the real military know-how historian guys I know say, all of them universally say, oh yeah, we could not have invaded the Soviet Union. I'm not saying they could have invaded us. We were dang good, really good. But we were not just going to walk into the Soviet Union and take what we wanted. That Soviet army invades Manchuria, slaps around the Japanese units that's there. We wait a few days, and this is the situation in Japan. This is what they're agonizing over right now. Not only are we going to drop another bomb, because we told them we were going to, what they were most worried about, this is going to be our lesson today, we're going to talk about. Yeah, they were worried about an American invasion. But one of the things that would push them out of the war after Nagasaki was they were really worried about a Soviet invasion. Now, why? It wasn't because the Soviet army was better than us. They knew we could fight by now. It was because the Soviet army would conduct itself in an invasion a bit differently than an American army would. We're going to come back to that in a moment. Just hang on there. 3 days later, we drop one on Nagasaki. Exact same situation happens. You should know this. Here's another little couple tidbits for you. We had come up with a target list for what the second city was going to be. Kyoto is like a sacred city in Japan. That was on the top of the list or towards the top. But the Secretary of War, Henry Stimson, he had honeymooned there and asked Truman to take it off the list so he didn't nuke it, and he did. And he wasn't initially, when the plane took off, was not heading for Nagasaki. How about that? I asked in the beginning, who's the luckiest guy in the world? Anybody residing in the Japanese city of Kukura in 1945, because the bomb, Fat Man, was on its way to Kukura to nuke it into oblivion and ran into an electrical storm, terrible weather, has to turn around. Target number two is Nagasaki. Talk about an unlucky day for Nagasaki. We also miss the target center of Nagasaki. Look, it was inaccurate, to put it mildly, aerial bombing back then. And we drop the bomb, detonates right over the residential area of Nagasaki. 40,000 gone. The reason there were fewer than Hiroshima is Nagasaki had hills around it that absorbed a lot of the blast, whereas Hiroshima was just flattened. After this, the Japanese council, facing the prospect of another bomb, an American invasion, and a Soviet invasion, they're still split. Still 3-3. Remember, the six-man military leadership council still split. Well, now the emperor finally steps in. The emperor steps in and says, okay, enough's enough. Let's call it a day. The surrender was actually not unconditional. The war hawks wanted a whole bunch of conditions. The guys who wanted peace wanted no conditions except for don't touch the emperor. We agreed to that one. Okay, we won't touch the emperor, but you have to tell the world it was an unconditional surrender. What can we learn from this? Might get uncomfortable, real uncomfortable here in a second. Hang on.
Newton Group Transfer. They are here to help you if you're stuck in a timeshare. These stories from people who have these timeshares and can't get out of them, they're shocking. These timeshare companies, not all of them, but so many, they get their hooks into you and you can't give them up. You can't give them up. Or they'll do things like they charge you thousands of dollars. One girl, she got past her timeshare when her mother passed away. She gets past the timeshare, doesn't want the timeshare, doesn't use the timeshare. They tell her she can get out of it for $4,000. She has to come up with a $4,000 check. This is not right. It's unjust. And Newton Group Transfers is here to help you. If you are in a timeshare and want out or know someone who is, call 888-845-3773. That's 888-84-JESSE, or go to timesharejesse.com. Newton Group Transfer. They will help you out.
This is an iHeart podcast.